What the hell was that?
Can you hear me now?
Can you hear me?
Hello?
Yeah. Are you there?
We gotta get rid of this kook. I got an idea.
Greatness at its finest.
Welcome to the Rodcast.
Wonder who that could be.
On the Horn, 104.9 AM 1260.
Come on, why you want to play a brother like that?
And hornfm.com.
Is there a problem back there?
With the Longhorns play and Austin talks sports.
To the Rodcast, Monday Funday edition of the Rodcast. We'll get into the national title game tonight, all SEC title game between Georgia and Bama. I'll give you my Black Stradamus pick. We'll break down the matchup. We'll do that here after the rundown, coming up in about 10 minutes from now. Also, next segment, we got to get into, and I know Ray is probably really excited about this because Ray's a Lakers fan randomly living in Texas. I don't even know how that works, but that does happen. And there's a controversy going on with the Lakers, and much like a lot of LeVar Ball haters out there have predicted, LeVar Ball has started to sabotage the Lakers season. It don't need sabotaging. They've lost 9 in a row. They're already really bad.
Hey, they just want to.
My bad. Oh, sorry. Over the weekend, they started to surge. Okay. All right. So they're trending in the right direction. But they're bad. All right. The Lakers are a bad basketball team. And LeVar Ball predictably has decided that, he's got something to say about the Lakers and the coaching staff.
What else is new?
Yeah, and it's I'm a little hurt by it because I've been a LeVar Ball supporter. I can't really support this because it's just asinine. You know what I mean? So we'll get into that. We got some sound from it. Rick Carlisle of the Dallas Mavericks, who is he's the head of what is it like
the Coaches Association
for the NBA?
Yeah.
So he's the head of the coaches. So I guess he felt he had to speak on behalf of the Coaches Association. That's why it's become a local story because Rick Carlisle, Dallas Mavs coach, is not a LeVar Ball fan and maybe not an ESPN fan. He's mad at ESPN and mad at LeVar Ball. So we'll get into that. We'll talk about that a little bit too. Coming up next segment, we'll also get into what I think for the NFL is the most pressing issue that is facing the NFL, at least for the coming future for the next 15, 20 years. And yet the NFL continues to handle it in an absolute, imbecilic fashion. I mean, it's gone from being a joke in the NFL to being an SNL comedic sketch. Like, it's really, really bad. So we'll get into that, too, coming up next segment as well. All right, let's not waste any time. You can always be a part of the show. Hit us up on your Specs text line, 512-337-3776. You also can hit us up via Twitter. I'm at Rod Barris. My man Ray is at Ray from the 361. Let's not waste any time. Let's do the damn thing. Let's get to the rundown.
These are the top headlines of the day. It's time for the rundown.
All right, we went over the NFL wildcard games and talked about them in depth in the first hour. But the results and the teams moving on, Jacksonville beat the Bills. Tennessee to 10-3. They beat Jacksonville 10-3, the lowest scoring wild card round in the history of the NFL playoffs. We'll talk about that a little bit more later on. Also, Kansas City with a meltdown. They were up 21-3 at halftime. They end up losing the game to Tennessee 22-21. New Orleans with a big win on the back of Drew Brees. They beat Carolina 31-26, and Atlanta beats LA 26-13 in the wild card round. And moving on to the divisional round, the Steelers hosting the Jags. They are a 7.5-point favorite over the Jags. The Vikings hosting the Saints, 3.5-point favorite over the Saints. And the Patriots hosting the Titans, 13-point favorites over the Titans. Here's a line that is historic from the Vegas Wise Guys. Atlanta is a 3-point favorite over Philadelphia. It is the first time in NFL history that a 6 seed has been favored over a 1 seed since the 12-team playoffs were a thing, since their inception, since the NFL playoffs were expanded. So that has never really happened. Of course, that's because Nick Foles will be the starting quarterback for Philadelphia instead of Carson Wentz, who is by himself an MVP candidate. We talked about those games. We'll get into them a little bit later on in the show and start previewing, obviously, the divisional round of the NFL playoffs coming up, too.
Poor Nick Foles, man. I saw him being interviewed, and he was trying to defend himself so much, saying, you know, that it's all on one. It's not on one player. It's on the team. But it's Carson Wentz ain't there. Carson Wentz is not there, and he was he had a good.
He had a great year. He had a great year. He's second in the NFL still in touchdown passes.
Like, yeah, he had a good running at MVP is what I was trying to say. He had a great running at MVP. Unfortunately, he got injured. But, Nick Foles will be the starting quarterback of that game. Tonight, we have the national title game. The Alabama Crimson Tide is taking on the Georgia Bulldogs in the Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta. Alabama is in their third straight college football championship game, seeking their 5th title in 9 years. Atlanta is only about 70 miles away from Athens. So, like I said in the first hour, I think this is a good home game advantage for the Georgia Bulldogs, who the crowd likes to show up. It's a Alabama is a 4-point favorite in this game, and my man Rod thinks that Georgia will cover the spread, I think Georgia will actually take this game.
I think they'll cover because they're built in almost in identical fashion, both of these teams. And Georgia's got a ton of talent, man. Georgia they're not as talented as Bama, but they're really really close. I think it'll be a tight game. Georgia's got a freshman quarterback too, man. That worries me.
But both teams are running backs. Both teams are all about the running backs.
I agree with you. I think it'll be actually a really competitive game all throughout. That's all I want. I know it may be an ugly game, and it's not going to be a highly rated game, but at least it'll be a competitive game.
Yeah, and Alabama is one of those. I mean, obviously Nick Saban knows what he's doing. He's going to go in there and he's going to take away your strongest asset, which is going to be Georgia's running game. So they're going to ask that freshman quarterback out there to throw the ball a little bit.
He's a Belichick disciple, you know it.
Yeah. So hopefully he can get that going.
All right, the American Football Coaches Association canceled Art Browse's speech. He was going to be a keynote speaker at their convention. Todd Berry, the executive director of the American Football Coaches Association, announced that, I believe earlier today, that Art Browse would no longer be speaking at the convention. They canceled his session after a lot of public outcry and blowback, negative blowback from fans. So that's not going to happen. What did happen, speaking of bringing the Browse name back, Kendall Browse was hired at U of H to be their quarterbacks coach, assistant head coach, and their offensive coordinator. Remember, he was formerly at Florida Atlantic with Lane Kiffin, and he was before that, of course, at Baylor with his dad, Art Browse, as their offensive coordinator. He now goes to U of H. They bring Roy Clemens with them, who is an offensive line coach and a run game coordinator as well. So that's right now, that's been the big story. Major Applewhite and the U of H athletic department have made statements basically that they have done their due diligence and they have vetted Kendall Browse, which, Florida Atlantic vetted him too. I just think it's one of those things where in the state of Texas, the Baylor controversy and scandal is going to be a bigger deal than it is in Florida. He's way away from the scandal in Florida. So you may get a couple of reporters that cover it, but in the state of Texas, the Baylor media and the Central Texas media can travel right down there to Houston and, they can write stories on, Kendall Browse. But I don't think they're backpedaling on this decision. I think they made a decision. They're going to stick with it. They're going to deal with the negative publicity. And college football is about W's and dollar signs, and they're trying to get W's right now. It may cost them some dollar signs, but they're trying to get W's with this Kendall Browse hire. It's controversial, man, but there are a lot of ties there. Remember, those guys were on the 40 acres the same time I was. My teammates were Major Applewhite and Kendall Browse, both of those guys. All right, so that's how that good old boys coaching network goes way, way back, man. It's like I said, it's Cosa Nostra. It's old school. That's why they like the loyalty, the trust. They believe it starts way, way back in your kind of coaching tenure. and they competed against one another as coaches at Baylor in Texas. They were teammates here at Texas. There's a U of H connection because he's now there at U of H, and Art Briles was there at U of H at one point, and Kendall Briles, he actually transferred to U of H from Texas. So it's just so much there. I mean, listen, even Texas, there's that tie there where Tom Herman has got a member of that Baylor coaching staff on his staff. I know a lot of those guys that were on that Baylor coaching staff because they were at Texas. There was like a connection between those guys, Casey Horner being one of them. So it's one of those things where nobody's been specifically named in the Pepper Hamilton report or the finding of facts, which is unfortunate, by the way. And because of that, there's nobody specifically held accountable. So these guys kind of walk through the raindrops, and if they get a shot here, they can get it. Until there is actually a debt paid and there is justice for the victims, nobody's going to be able to move on from this thing. Nobody. Yep. Yeah. So and it includes the people that deserve second chances. People deserve second chances once you pay your debt for your egregious offense or sin or breaking of the law. Right now, nobody's paid a debt, and the victims feel like they're not getting justice, and they're right. So, I don't know, man. It's one of those really murky issues, but
yeah.
Major Applewhite decided, you know what, I'm making a football decision. That's a football decision.
Yeah. And Major Applewhite or the University of Houston are going to have to just keep a close eye on Kendall Briles while he's out recruiting, because he is going to be doing some of the recruiting. They're going to have to send somebody with them to make sure this guy ain't, you know, asking players out there, hey, do you like white women?
What that you know what? I can't believe that. It sounds like something fake. That would be fake news, but you're right. That was actually one of his recruiting pitches was, do you like white girls? We got a lot of them, and they like football players. So
yep.
I don't even know if that's a recruiting violation, technically. I don't know.
But it's definitely immoral.
It's definitely unethical. It's definitely immoral. I totally agree. Totally agree with you. I don't know if it's a recruiting violation. You know what I mean? It's kind of like the NCAA. Like, the NCAA, they don't have a moral compass. They got a money compass. The fact that they have not stepped in here and put a show cause on the Briles family. Like, you know, you guys can't coach in college for 10 years. Or whatever it is.
Yeah.
That in itself shows you the ineptitude that's being, I think, widespread when it comes to this Baylor scandal.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to use a saying that you like to say, but in a little bit of a different context. From shame to fame. And that's the College Football Hall of Fame.
This is true.
Mack Brown is actually going to be inducted in the College Football Hall of Fame. He's going to be the third Texas coach behind Darryl K. Royal and Dana Bible to go into the Hall of Fame. Texas, his Texas head coaching record is 158-48. He started his head coaching career at Appalachian State, where he was there for 1 year. He did 3 years at Tulane, 9 years at North Carolina, and finished off his glorified career 16 years in Texas. His overall coaching record is 244-122-1.
Yeah. No, I mean, no, Mack Brown obviously deserves it. Charles Woodson going in with him, I think. I think Frank Beamer is also going in with him. Congratulations to Coach Brown. That's well deserved. I mean, Mack Brown changed the course of football here in the state of Texas for the Big 12, for everything. Like, he really did. And his marketing mind, marketing genius, if you will, can still be the effects of the results of it can still be felt on the 40 acres today. He really was one of those great minds all time in college football. In NBA action, the San Antonio Spurs lost to the Portland Trailblazers 111-110 last night. LaMarcus Aldridge actually had 30 points. And you pointed out that Kawhi Leonard has an injury now.
Yeah, he has a small tear in his shoulder. I forget what side it is, but he has a small tear in one of his shoulders. And he's going to be out for a few months. They're thinking maybe a couple months.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. Kawhi Leonard obviously hadn't been back that long for missing most of the start of the regular season. New York also beat Dallas 100-96. Tonight, H-Town at Chicago, Houston at Chicago, and San Antonio at Sacramento. Remember, James Harden is still out for the Houston Rockets. One story that wasn't it's not a recent story. I think it broke earlier this weekend, but Kellen Moore of the Cowboys is going to be their new quarterback coach. Kellen Moore, who's formerly their backup quarterback, is going to be their new quarterback coach. They're going for youth. He's 28 years old. Now, Jason Garrett made a similar leap, so they do have experience with that type of transition. Wade Wilson was there way too long, since 2007, so we're going on 10 years since he's been the quarterback coach. The quarterback position has changed a ton since then, especially with a guy like Dak Prescott in his second year. And Scott Linehan, who's the offensive coordinator, has a history with Kellen Moore as well, because they were in Detroit together in the first 2 years where Kellen Moore was in the league. So you know, it's one of those things where you can criticize it on the surface. It is kind of one of those things like easily, you know, one of those things you can easily criticize and bring up kind of the negatives of it. But it might not be a bad move for the Cowboys. And there are a ton of moves right now being made for the Cowboys, especially in their coaching staff. That may be actually one of the better moves looking ahead, if you will. Okay, also something else that I want to bring. Caden Stearns ended up being the MVP of the Army All-American game, who was one of the members of that much-heralded defensive back class for Texas. So the Army Bowl MVP, Caden Stearns. Yeah, a six-foot warden. Of course, we talked a ton about these guys, but he had two interceptions in a 17-16 win. His team, the West team, beat the East team in the Saturday U.S. Army All-American game in San Antonio. So, once again, those we had Jerry Hamilton on last week to talk about the Longhorns in the Under Armour All-American game. You got some. I think Anthony Cook was in that game. Jalen Green in that game as well. Caden Stearns, all those guys, defensive backs. And Caden Stearns ends up winning the bowl game MVP for Texas. That's the rundown brought to you by our good friends at Top Gun Lawn and Equipment Rentals. TopGun.net is where you find out more about that. That's with two N's, TopGun.net. All right, let's talk about the national title game. The most important player in the national title game tonight is Jacob Fromm. I know he's only a freshman, but you got there's a history here. Jacob Fromm actually decommitted from Nick Saban in Alabama. He was committed to Saban in Alabama for five months or so. And I remember the shakeup. Yeah, obviously, Mark Richt fired at Georgia. Kirby Smart ends up coming from that Alabama staff to Georgia as the head coach. Lane Kiffin leaves and we're going to FAU. So the staff that originally recruited Jacob Fromm, who's now starting for Georgia as a quarterback, they all kind of, you know, they became disjointed. They all left and this kind of thing. And Alabama didn't make him a priority. But when Kirby Smart went to Georgia, he made Jacob Fromm one of his top priorities. Jacob Fromm is from Georgia, and his dad went to Georgia. So there was history there, and Boone ended up getting him. Jacob Eason goes down, and Jacob Fromm ends up taking over. And obviously, we know the rest with Georgia being 13-1, Alabama 12-1. So the most important player to me is Jacob Fromm, because we talked about how Nick Saban is a Belichick disciple. And what do we know about Belichick and what Belichick does? Belichick takes away your strength. He's going to take away what you do best. Whatever it is you do best, there's the identity of your team. He's going to take that away. He's going to force you to beat him left-handed. He's going to force you to beat him doing something you're not comfortable with, out of your comfort zone. And Jacob Fromm would be, you know, outside of Georgia's comfort zone. They want to run the ball. They got the most productive running back duo in the history of college football. I'm not making it up. That is actually a fact. No running back duo in college football history has been more productive than Nick Chubb and Sone Michel. All right, so you got to stop both of those guys who combined for 326 yards rushing, five touchdowns, 13 yards per carry between them in that Rose Bowl versus Oklahoma. Sounds fake, it ain't. They had touchdown runs of 27, 38, 50, and 75. At one point, I believe they were averaging at one point like 19 yards per carry at one point during that game. Like and then people were like, "Why don't you just keep handing the ball off to those two guys?" So Alabama's going to try to take that away. Alabama is the number one defense in yards per carry allowed, allowing 2.7 yards per carry. Number one rush defense in the country, allowing 91.8 rushing yards a game. All right? So Bama can stop the run. We all know that. And I think they're actually going to be able to not take away Georgia's run, but they're going to be able to limit it and neutralize it. And they're going to force Jacob Fromm to win the game. He's got, 2,383 passing yards, 23 touchdowns. He's fourth in passer rating in the country behind only Baker Mayfield, Mason Rudolph, and Central Florida's McKenzie Milton. So he can go, all right? He can beat you. But he's young, he's inexperienced, and Nick Saban's going to throw everything, including the kitchen sink, at him. And that's what worries me if I'm rooting for Georgia. Georgia, I think, is eighth nationally in rushing yards per game, They're averaging 267 rushing yards per game, which is phenomenal. They're 16 yards per carry, averaging over almost 6 yards per carry. Hey, but Bama's 10th. Bama's 10th nationally in rushing yards, 255. They're 8th in yards per carry, 5.8. They're really close to Georgia in the running game. They're not that far behind because Jalen Hurts, as a dual threat X factor, he can gain those extra yards and keep the chains moving. So Bama's running game and Georgia's running game are comparable. Where Bama separates is their rush defense. Number one in yards per carry allowed, number one in rush defense. Georgia, 30th in yards per carry allowed. They're 20th in rush defense. They're allowing over 120 rushing yards per game. Now, that's still really good. That's still upper echelon of college football. But Bama's got a little bit of an edge. And so I don't know how good Jacob Fromm is. We will see tonight. Because Nick Saban is going to make sure Jacob Fromm has to beat them. If you think Nick Chubb and Sony Michel are going to beat Nick Saban, you're crazy. He ain't going to let it happen. He knows those guys are going to beat him. He knows that's what Georgia wants to do. And Georgia knows this, too. That's the thing about the Padawan facing the Jedi Master. You know, Kirby Smart's been in those film rooms with Nick Saban in situations like this where he's facing an assistant, at which he's 11-0 versus his former assistants. What edge does Kirby Smart have psychologically over Nick Saban? What edge can he give? Does he know how Nick Saban's going to think? Can he predict the next move of Nick Saban in the chess match? Can he predict what Nick Saban is going to do to adapt to what Georgia's doing? Like, that's the key. How good of a coach is Kirby Smart? If you think he's a damn good coach, you might want to pick Georgia in this game. Because he'll have Jacob Fromm ready for whatever Nick Saban's going to throw. Remember, they run the same defense. It ain't. Micah Fitzpatrick said they got the same signs as we do, basically. Same signs, same everything. They don't try to hide it. Nick Saban's different. He's like, you know what? I can't hide it. That guy literally studied under me for years. He knows exactly how I think and what I'm going to run. They're running the same defense. So if Kirby Smart can teach Jacob Fromm how to adapt to that defense that Nick Saban's going to throw at him, that's a hell of an X factor. But it's a reason his assistants are 0-11 when they face Nick Saban. Because he's keeping a little something. He's keeping a little something. All right, so Kirby Smart, by the way, with Georgia, 8-0 in night games. I don't know what the hell that's about, but he's 8-0 in night games. And Bama has forced a turnover in 41 of the last 43 games. If that youngster starts turning the ball over, that's what Bama's going to feast on. So, you know, the matchup zones that Bama likes to play, when Nick Saban likes to play, he's not those country zones. He's talking about matchup zones where it's basically like basketball principles. That guy comes in your zone, you take him man to man. You know, they'll run there are multiple defense, but against spread options, teams have been able to make Nick Saban's defense more predictable. Because when you go against spread teams, 3-4 wide receivers, Nick Saban plays mostly 4-man fronts. Usually Nick Saban is really unpredictable. You come out there with, you know, kind of your base personnel over and over again, Nick Saban will eat you alive. But you come out there with some very diverse formations and personnel packages, hey, you force him to have to adapt and experiment too. This is going to be a very interesting chess match. But I think Nick Saban's going to come out on top. I'm sorry. I can't bet against Nick Saban. He's 11-0 versus his former assistant coaches. He's got a better rush defense. He's got a comparable rushing attack. Jalen Hurts has been here before. He's also going to be an X factor. His dual threat ability, his ability to make something out of nothing, to be able to extend the play, that's going to be big. So it's going to come down to the two quarterbacks, but nobody's more important than Jacob Fromm. If Jacob Fromm is slinging the rock confidently, and he's able to move the football, passing it, which, you know, Nick Saban's going to put him in a position on third and long situation where Jacob Fromm's got to beat him. We'll see what Jacob Fromm is made of. We'll see if Jacob Fromm can, you know, have his coming out party tonight, because that's what it's going to take for him to beat Bama, in my opinion. Bama's a 4.5-point favorite. So I got Bama in the game. Oh, by the way, President Trump is going to the game. You heard this?
No, I didn't.
President Trump is going to the game. They already announced it. President Trump's going.
Nice.
We don't know in what capacity, though.
I didn't realize he was a sports fan.
What? President Trump's like a huge sports fan.
I know he tried to buy an NFL team, but yeah. I didn't think he really like
USFL.
Thought he just wanted to be a part of that club. You know,
Trump loves sports. That's one of the redeeming qualities to Americans about Trump is that Trump just he does love sports. Like most Americans, red blooded American, loves sports. He's one of those guys.
Nice.
And I don't know if he's like doing a coin toss or what he's doing. Like Kendrick Lamar is doing the halftime show.
Yeah.
So I wonder how that is going to clash. Kendrick Lamar, who is a very socially conscious rapper, very politically relevant rapper in terms of his lyrics. He's going to do the halftime show for the college football playoff championship game, and President Trump's going to be there. He's not going to be there for the whole game. Like, he's not going to hang out. He's going to hang out for, like, I'm sure, a quarter and a half. What quarter and a half he hangs out for, and do they get an interview with him? I'm sure they'll get an interview with him. I mean, if the president is there. Championship game, you get an interview. And what is he going to talk about? What is he going to say? Oh, I can't wait.
You know who I wonder is going to be there? Atlanta native Ric Flair. I wonder if he'll be out there.
Oh, Ric Flair's got to be there. Woo! Oh, Ric Flair's got to be there. That's a great point. Think about that. Yep. Yeah, in Atlanta. They're calling Atlanta now the college football capital of the world.
Really?
Yeah, they said there are more SEC fans in Atlanta than any other place because Atlanta's it's a major metropolitan city. And because the SEC has won, I don't know, how many championships? 9 out of the last 15 or something crazy like that. Because of that, SEC is the college football conference, all right, the most dominant college football conference, and the most relevant city in that conference is Atlanta. So they're saying Atlanta's the college football capital of the world. That's why they do everything there. Sport the college football awards and national football game and nothing. They're going to get a really good crowd, though, too. You point that out, Ray. They're going to get a really good crowd because Georgia's in there. Okay, we come back. We'll get into – oh, we got to play this LaVar Ball sound. We got a sound from Lonzo Ball, LaVar Ball, and Luke Walton. Luke Walton may have made the best joke of 2017 about LaVar Ball. It was beautiful. It was great. Oh, did you cut out the S word, the profanity?
No, I did not.
Okay.
But
you know what? You got to. Okay. That was a profanity in the Luke Walton song I sent you.
I heard it.
Did you hear it? Did you cut it out?
No, I think we can play it.
No, I think he says like something we can't play on air.
Okay.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, we got to listen.
Well, I'll bleep it out.
I'm glad I brought this up so Ray and I don't get fired. But there's a sound of Luke Walton making a joke about LaVar Ball that we have to play that could get us fired. I'm glad we found that. So we're going to get into that when we come back and talk about why Rick Carlisle gives a damn about LaVar Ball and the Lakers and why it's relevant and why you should care. Also, what has gone from being a joke in the NFL to a full-on SNL comedic sketch. We'll get into that when we come back. All that and more right here on the broadcast. It's The Horn, 104.9, AM 1260. All right, welcome back to the broadcast. You can always hit us up on the Specs text line, 512-337-3776. I got some stats for you degenerate gamblers out there listening. And trust me, that is not a derogatory term. Listen, I'm a degenerate. I'm just not a gambling degenerate. I'm a degenerate in many ways. All right? So I'm not talking bad on you. But Chris Lowe of CLO ESPN said, if ever there was a doubt that college football is king in the South, the Alabama-Georgia final means the South will have produced the national champion in 15 of the last 20 years. If Georgia wins, he said that would mean six different states will have been represented in the South. Alabama, Florida, Georgia, Louisiana, Tennessee, and South Carolina. South Carolina because of Clemson. If Georgia wins. So that, man, that's a bold statement. It seems like why the SEC is naturally college football king, the best players in college football or in the South. Pretty much. I mean, that's basically what it says. Here's another one from Chris Falica, at Chris Falica in the Twitterverse. 27 games between the BCS championship game, college football semifinals, and the final. So only twice the underdog covered but didn't win outright. So out of the last 27 BCS championship games or college football championship games or semifinals, all right, only twice has the underdog covered but won outright, but didn't win outright. And that's what I'm saying is going to happen. I'm saying Georgia's going to cover, but I'm saying they're not going to win. And that was 2013 Auburn, lost by 3. They were a 9-point dog. In 2015 Clemson, lost by 5. They were a 6.5-point dog. All right? So it's rare that teams cover in the championship game of college football but don't win outright. in terms of them just the underdog just pulling off the upset, 13 times out of those 27, the dog won outright. The underdog just wins. So 13 times, that's basically close to half the time the underdog just wins. He said that 12 other times the favorite won and covered. So the favorite has won 14 out of 27 championship games in the BCS championship game or the college football playoffs semifinals or the championship game. All right, 27 games. The favorite has won 14 times. 13 times the underdog has won. But there actually has been 15 times where the underdog has won and are covered. So it's, yeah, the underdog... You know, the underdog is rare they're going to cover and lose, which I'm predicting they're going to cover and they're not going to win. I think that's what's going to happen to Georgia tonight. But if you're picking Georgia to win, you're not crazy because 13 times the underdog has just won the game. You know what I mean? 13 out of 27. That's not crazy. So it's going to be this may be as tight a matchup in terms of comparing the teams, comparing the rosters, and comparing the coaching staffs as we've seen in a really, really long time. All right, one other thing I want to bring up before we get into this Rick Carlisle slash LeVar Ball slash Lonzo Ball story, and hopefully Ray has edited the info so that none of us are fired. Keep your hand on the dump button about that, too. Real quick, the NFL concussion protocol has basically gone from becoming a joke, and I've described it as a joke on this show several times. Now it's a full-on comedic sketch. I mean, it's ridiculous. Remember, the NFL just changed their concussion policy. Like, I'm sure, like, less than 2 weeks ago. Remember, here's the new policy. Sorry, 9 days ago. 10 days today. 10 days ago, the NFL announced it would, quote, require a locker room concussion evaluation for all players demonstrating gross or sustained vertical instability. What the hell does that mean? Vertical instability. Why'd you have to say that? Why'd you have to put it like that? You can't just say, hey, man, if somebody can't stand on their own, they need to be taken to the locker room. No, this is lawyers. These are lawyers trying to describe football. So you know. This is lawyers trying to describe football. It's somebody doing like marriage contracts, all right? Vertical instability. What the hell does that mean? Which is, i.e., stumbling or falling to the ground when trying to stand. Okay. It's Cam Newton was stumbling. He actually went to the ground. He wasn't sent to the locker room. I think he missed like one play. He wasn't sent to the locker room. They didn't evaluate him. So essentially, the Panthers, who are being investigated by the NFL right now, they violated the 10-day-old concussion rule about anybody who receives a hellacious hit or any type of head trauma that goes to the ground, falls to the ground, and cannot walk or leave the field under their own power. He literally started, first of all, he couldn't stand on his own. He's helped up by his teammates. He started walking off under his own power and then went to the ground on his own. Still went back in the game. Now, he balled out. Cam was a ball. He balled out. But I think we all can agree, Cam probably shouldn't have went back out on the field. Anybody who's seen that hit, it was like, man, that dude. And Cam claims that he got stuck in the eye. He says, quote, my helmet came down low enough over my eyelid and it got pressed into the player's stomach, I believe. I thought maybe somebody stuck his finger in my eye. That was his explanation. It's like Russell Wilson and the, I don't know, remember Russell Wilson says, oh, yeah, I got my jaw, I thought my jaw was broken. I didn't have a concussion. You know what may lead to a concussion? Your jaw being broken. Remember Cameron Jordan hit him. He says, aside from that being as believable as the dog gave my homework, he said he looked dazed. He looked a little phased. He definitely wasn't unfazed, says Cameron Jordan. Yeah. And the NFL just changed their concussion rule and yet still found a way to screw it up. Like and I think the NFL, now they're investigating, they need to fine the Panthers like $1 million. I know it sounds crazy. And they need to dock them a draft pick for what they did. Because the concussion protocol is brand new. If you want to start the concussion protocol and start people off taking it seriously, the new revamped version, then you need to make the punishment fit the crime if you believe that concussions should be taken seriously. Until the NFL starts taking it seriously, nobody else is going to. Remember, the Seattle Seahawks were fined only $100,000 for the Russell Wilson incident, for him find a way to circumvent the concussion protocol. They were fined $300,000 for a violation of practice rules when they allowed too many contact practices a couple of years ago. Pete Carroll was fined $200,000 for that. They were docked a fifth-round pick for that. They were only fined $100,000 for allowing Russell Wilson to circumvent the concussion protocol. The Patriots were fined $1 million. Tom Brady got a four-game suspension. They were docked a first and a fourth-round pick for Deflategate. Yet we'll see what the Panthers get. $100,000 right now is the that's the precedent. They let Tom Savage went back on the field after basically having a seizure on the field. Jacoby Brissett issue. Tyrod Taylor, by the way, he's in concussion protocol right now for the Bills. Season's over. Literally, he was put in concussion protocol after the game. And remember, Travis Kelce obviously has to leave the game for the Kansas City Chiefs because he suffers a head injury. So they actually were warned to abide it with the new concussion protocol. It's just a joke. I mean, Cam Newton went right back on the field. And Cam Newton probably should be fined too. Cam Newton probably should be fined. The NFL should be fined. Carolina Panthers should be fined. The NFL's not going to fine itself. It should, but it won't. And whoever is supposed to be the independent neurologists who are watching from the booths, remember, they got those guys too, they should also be fined and or fired. Because the NFL concussion protocol is a joke, and everybody knows it. Not even a joke, like I said. It's the joke that kind of joke that's not funny anymore. All right, let's get into this Lonzo Ball, LaVar Ball, Rick Carlisle controversy. Okay, the first sound, you play LaVar Ball first here, Ray? Let's get into LaVar Ball. You got the LaVar Ball here? All right, here's LaVar Ball. LaVar Ball, for those who don't know, basically said that he doesn't think the Lakers players are playing for Luke Walton.
So I tell him that's a pride thing. And that's what I see on the outside sometimes. And it might be a strong opinion, but it's my opinion. On the fact that I'm like, they can't be losing like this. You know, but something is going on right there. And I don't know. And they got to work to fix it. But from when I look at things like that and being in that mode, when you're losing by that much, I got to look at something. And that's what I say. It's like the guys look like they don't want to play. But that's what I said. They probably want to play for them as hard as they can. But it's going on what I see from a aspect. I'm like, I don't see as many high fives. I don't see as many... When guys go to the bench, it looks like they're mad that they're coming out. So this is the what I assume like that. It may be wrong, it's right.
How much have you talked to Lonzo about this?
I haven't talked to Lonzo. I haven't talked to anybody about it. I'm just telling you how I felt about it because from what I'm looking at, I'm like, you can't keep losing like this. Something's got to be wrong. It just can't be, oh, we weren't ready to play. It's something. You know, I don't know what it is.
They've lost nobody knows. In a row.
That's a lot of losing. I'm not used to losing like this, regardless of whose team my boys are on. The losing right there brings up the frustration part. Even though I'm not playing and all that, it's more to me. And it's because of the winning that I have with my boys and the way we bred. So the losing, I can't see it like, okay, if all the players are doing wrong or this and that. I don't know. I don't get going how I feel about it. And it's not to knock the Lakers or anything like that. It's not to knock the coach. I'm just, you know, how I am assertive. I'm like, wow, what could be the problem?
Okay, so basically LaVar Ball said, hey, I don't think the players are playing for Luke anymore. And he said it's his opinion. He didn't base it on anything. All right, so Rick Carlisle got mad at ESPN for publishing that article, and that sound was courtesy of ESPN. And here's what Rick Carlisle had to say about ESPN and responsible journalism.
As president of the Coaches Association, I view the recent ESPN article as a disgrace, quite honestly. Luke Walton is a terrific young coach who's bringing along a young team, and it's a difficult task. And if you don't believe it, just ask me. You know, we're going through that now. We went through it last year. ESPN is a partner, you know, is an NBA partner. And they've been a great one. But, you know, part of that partnership is that, you know, the coaches do a lot of things to help them with access, interviews, all those kinds of things. And in exchange for that, you know, they should back up the coaches.
Whoa, that just sounds bad. They should back up the coaches. Like, no, that's not the way media is supposed to work. So Luke Walton obviously hears about all this. Luke Walton is asked, did he see the LeVar Ball report? Here's Luke Walton.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. I don't see that the players aren't playing. I think our players are playing very hard. You know, we've been through a hard stretch. But they, you know, they're giving us, you know, they're giving us what they have, and we're going to keep working. We'll be fine.
When you see something like that, do you talk to Lonzo to see if any of that is coming from him in any way?
No, you know, this morning I haven't talked to him about that, but it's, you know, obviously a weird day. But we stay in contact about, you know, what's going on and where he's at with things. But we haven't spoken yet.
Do you get any sense that he has been frustrated with your coaching staff?
Who? Zoe? No.
LeVar obviously has a...
Yeah, so he said, hey, him and Zoe, they're all good. All right, so Luke Walton, this was after, I think, maybe their last game. And this may be why LeVar Ball was so upset, because apparently he took Lonzo out of the game early. And here's the media asking Luke Walton, head coach of the Lakers, why he decided to take Lonzo out of the game early, and his response may be the best joke of the year.
You subbed Lonzo out early in the first and third quarter, early in the first and third quarter to get a run with the second unit, and then that unit played very well together. Can you talk a little bit about the thought process on that and why you think that unit worked so well?
Yeah, his dad was talking. So I took him out early.
Oh, that's great. That was awesome. That was beautiful. I couldn't have asked any coach to handle it better. His dad was talking, so I took him out of the game early. That's the way I did it. That's great. Actually, I'm going to say Luke Walton is handling this thing.
He is.
Very well.
Yep. Definitely,
right?
Definitely.
Okay, I'm going to say maybe I'm rumbling. Like, he's actually handling it really, really well. And just based on everything that's going on, that's been the challenge for Luke Walton. Is how are you going to handle LeVar Ball? How is he going to handle this whole Ball controversy? I think he's doing a great job. Okay, we come back. We may get into what is every Cowboys fan's worst nightmare. Also, crosstalk with Chad Hastings. All that and more in return right here on the broadcast. This is The Horn 104.9 and AM 1260. All right, welcome back to the Rodcast. You can always be a part of the show. Hit us up on the Specs text line, 512-337-3776. Chad, you're a Cowboys fan, right?
I am.
Okay, did you see this story in the New York Daily News from, I'll make sure, Gary Myers?
No.
He basically said it's possible. This is what I point out, maybe every Dallas Cowboys fan's worst nightmare.
Okay.
That Bill Belichick has such a romantic connection with the Giants. Because of Bill Parcells and his time with him, and there's a great documentary coming out called The Two Bills, where he talks a lot about his time with the Giants.
That's gonna be good.
It's gonna be really
good.
Yeah,
it's the next that's a 30 for 30, right?
Yeah, I can't wait for that.
That'll
one.
Be good.
But that Bill Belichick might decide, you know what, I'm done with these Patriots and done with Brady and, you know, and Kraft, and I might move on to the Giants.
Oh, good grief.
Of all teams. I know, they say it's like a 10% chance, but he has some quotes from people close and say, if there's any team that he would jump ship to, it would be the Giants.
Ugh.
Only other team you would consider.
As a Cowboys fan, to quote the girl in Caddyshack when Danny Noonan proposes, oh, that's all I need. I mean, that would be all Cowboys fans would need on top of all the other garbage that they deal with.
Nick Foles and the Eagles doing well for the next 10 years, arguably. Oh. Like, that would be horrible. I don't think it's going to happen, but that would be really bad.
You'd have to watch Jason Garrett and Bill Belichick meet at midfield and think to yourself, oh, God, how much football is in one of those brains? But it doesn't seem to be in the other. What's going on?
That would be great. I did not think about. Only a Cowboys fan can see that visual.
Yeah, you imagine that battle of wits. Wonder who wins that one.
Speaking of battle of wits, Kirby Smart, Nick Saban, the Padawan versus the Jedi Master. Who wins the battle of wits tonight, in your opinion?
I'm going to go with Bama. The stat is funny. You know I love stats. Some of them just flat don't matter. The 11-0 stat does not matter tonight.
How does that not matter?
It literally doesn't matter.
Give me your rationale.
Now, we make ourselves think it matters, but in terms of this matchup tonight, He's never faced Kirby Smart in a national title
game.
Yeah, I guess he faced him when they played in 15 against Georgia. He wouldn't have been there yet, would he?
No, he wasn't there yet.
This is his second
year. You're right.
He played him, beat him 38-10. Yeah. He's never faced Kirby. So technically, the stat doesn't mean anything, but it's hard to ignore it. It's a tough stat to ignore. It's like if you're about to date the girl, right? And it's like, okay, man, I know she's really nice to you, but you realize she's dumped every guy she's dated and stolen their car and ran it into a bridge. You realize that. Now, that doesn't have anything to do with your car or your situation, but she's done it every time.
Okay, I got a better analogy. If you're a dating girl, everybody knows your ex-woman has hooked up with other guys, mm-hmm. and they have, you know, been sexually active with other guys. But when there's a sex tape, It's hard to get over the sex tape of your ex. It's cool to get, like, yeah, she did it. She dated a guy. Oh, fine. I'm cool with that. I've seen that guy. Met that guy. Yeah, you know, you're shaking hands with the guy like that. You know, your woman's looked that weird. It's always kind of weird. Like, yeah, just you know what I mean. But the sex tape being out there, I was like, man, can I get over that? And to me, that's the 11-0 stat. It's like, damn, man, that's a sex
that's
tape.
True.
I can't get over that.
That's a difference between hard to deal with and a hard copy. And a hard copy of what happened.
It's out there.
Yeah, I'll go with Bama. I think it's going to be a slugfest bar fight.
Yeah.
17-10 was the first score in my head today. I think it might even get lower than that. I feel almost silly saying Georgia scoring a touchdown in this game, but I'm going to give them the love and say they'll score the touchdown. I say Bama will be one score better. I just don't trust. I don't trust Bama to step on Georgia the way they've stepped on other people in the past. I don't trust him to win 27-6. I don't trust him to win 31-3. Because this year, when we've seen them with their foot on the neck, something happens.
They've allowed them to come back like Pitt Cemetery, just come back to life.
Like the sweet music plays, and they think, nah, I can't do it. And they walk away. They don't snap the neck like they used to.
I think, and let me know if I'm wrong, Jacob Fromm is the most important player in this game because Nick Saban is going to take away what Georgia does best. Or at least that's what he's going to try to do. And they have the best rush defense in the country, Alabama does, so they will be able to neutralize that Bama running attack. Jacob Fromm's going to beat Bama.
Yep.
When it comes, basically, that's how you beat Bama, right? Your quarterback beats Bama.
Correct.
Pretty much. That's the way it works out.
Yeah, and we were talking about the other day. Not only do you have to have a dual threat quarterback, he must make a play with his arm to beat Nick Saban.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
Period. Period.
Period.
Deshaun Watson did it barely, but you have to make plays with your arm and run a pick play that might have been illegal. But anyway, make the play with your arm.
Nick Saban got that pick play now. He has one of those.
That he does.
He ran it with
the big boys,
yeah, he did,
too.
Right?
Well, remember when A&M went there and beat him in Tuscaloosa? How'd they do it?
Yeah.
Johnny's arm. Now, they backed off and didn't respect Johnny's arm, but Johnny's arm got them that lead.
Cam Newton, you go back. There ain't many examples, but you're right. It's always the quarterback's got to go make a damn play. This will be the Jacob Fromm coming out party of Georgia wins.
Yeah, because those dudes up front on defense are so silly. If you love defensive football, if you're old school at all, I mean, the battle of the Quans, Roquan on one side and Raekwon on the other side.
Roquan and Raekwon.
I'm trying to keep them all straight. I had to write the names down, right? Raekwon Davis is Bama's big D lineman. Roquan Smith is Georgia's awesome linebacker. They're going to be Quans flying all over the place tonight.
Yeah. Hey, Quan, that's always a good thing. What's the movie with Quan Means Money? Was it Jerry Maguire? Boom. Quan.
Yes.
There you go. See, Quan is a good thing.
And these guys will make a lot of Quan later on.
I wonder that's why black people are naming their kids Quan. It's because of the movie. Is that possible? Jerry Maguire is why black people are being named Quan.
I have no theory on that.
All right, but Chad Hastings, stick around for him and Kevin Dunn coming up next. Ray, you did a great job as always. Thank you, folks, out there for hitting me up on the Specs Text line. Love you guys. Remember, the revolution will not be televised. We're talking about it right here on the Rodcast. Love you guys. Have a great weekend or great night. Man, I wish we had a great weekend. Love you. Peace.
Hope you're ready for the next episode. Hey.